Welcome to the Razor's Ink podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. It's been said that a strong woman stands up for herself. A stronger woman stands up for everyone else. And while portrayals of women in the 60s vastly differed on TV and in the movies, empowerment was still a central theme to both. So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, the strong woman who was that girl. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
I was 8 years old in 1966. We received our television programming only from three networks, beamed into our homes for free. All that was required was a television, black or white or color, a set of rabbit ear antennas, or maybe a rooftop antenna. We weren't able to record programs at the time, so we gathered around the set at the appointed day and time to watch our favorite programs. Television wasn't edgy. The top shows of 66 included Star Trek, Mission Impossible, Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, My Favorite Martian, Walt Disney's Wonderful World of Color, Ben Casey, Bullwinkle, Dark Shadows, and The Dating Game, to name a few. 1966 was the year women spoke up and demanded more. The National Association of Women was founded in 1966. A couple of writers from the popular Dick Van Dyke Show approached the executive producer, Danny Thomas, with a pitch. Danny was an actor, comedian, producer, and star of his own television series, Make Room for Daddy, which ran on two different networks between 1953 through 1964. Here's the pitch. Danny, let's create a 30-minute weekly series about a single woman who packs her bags and heads for New York City to become an actress, and we'll build a sitcom about her trials and tribulations, including the zany gigs and temp jobs she performs to support herself whilst she seeks her big acting break. She'll meet a writer for a national magazine, fall in love, and every week we'll introduce various kooky neighbors, friends, and Anne's predicaments, always being central to the storyline. Danny either read the tea leaves about women's changing expectations or got lucky, because the series, starring his daughter, Marlo Thomas, was picked up by a network. You might say, gee, it's nice to have a producer father to give you a series, but that girl would not have had a 5-year, 136-episode run but for Marlo's charisma, charm, humor, and acting chops.
I have to go get the guest list. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay, I'll wait for you right here.
All right, now have fun. Mingle.
Donald, I don't know anybody here.
Well, what difference does that make?
Well, I don't know how to mingle with strangers.
Well, there's nothing to know. Just mingle.
All right, I'll mingle. Mingle, mingle.
I interest you in a single mingle.
Ted Bessel aptly played Anne Marie's boyfriend, Donald Hollinger, always at her side, playing the straight man, pun intended, to her comedic genius.
Oh, Don, listen, about my being late.
What happened?
Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about.
Are you all right?
I'd rather not answer that question right now. She was robbed.
Robbed?
Well, not quite.
What do you mean, not quite? Either something's missing or it's not.
I was robbed.
Well, then, for Pete's sake, let's call the police. No wonder I couldn't get through.
Donald, don't wait a minute. Don't call the police.
Why not?
Because I'm the robber.
Is she making any sense to you?
Yes, she is. And I would like to add goodbye. Goodbye.
Folks, The show was a sitcom about Anne. Male viewers felt Donald's sexual frustration, but that girl wasn't produced to appeal to men's sexual appetites. The 5-year, 136-episode run was brilliantly summarized by a cold open. That is, a scene before the opening credits where some character turns to Anne Marie, points, and says,
"Over there. That girl.
That girl.
What happened?
Somebody got hit in the head by Plotsky's line drive.
Well, who was it?
Who was it?
Yeah.
It was that girl."
Cut to beautiful opening credits showing Marlowe standing in front of iconic New York City landmarks with emboldening, enthusiastic, motivating, and gorgeous music arrangement by Earl Hagen. It resembles a recruiting commercial for women to just go for it. Marlowe was also an astute businesswoman who set up her production company named Daisy Productions with an executive producer role and creative control. Marlowe burned out on the series and concluded it would end in the 5th season. What would happen to Anne and Donald? Marlowe put her foot down and acquiesced. Anne would get engaged, but not married on the show because she didn't want the viewers to believe marriage was the end game for women. That girl was a clarion call to girls and women that you too can pack a bag and seek a future which didn't require marriage. I'm certain many women were inspired to set out for the big city and stake their claim, whatever it might be. The point of That Girl was, you can be that girl too. I'm going to come back to Danny and Marlowe Thomas at the end of the podcast. Let's turn off the television, drive down to the movie theater, and watch movies about single women pursuing their dreams inside the big city at about the same time That Girl was running.
Do you remember Major Hartley?
You remember
Major Hartley? My mother's friend. He came down to Grand Central Station one day to pick me up from summer camp. Mother was away visiting. He took me home. He let me sit on his lap. He let me hug him. He told me I was beautiful. He stayed in that house for 1 week and taught me more about evil than any 13-year-old girl in the world knew.
Glory, don't.
You haven't heard the worst of it yet. I loved it. Every awful moment of it, I loved. That's your Gloria, Steve. That's your darling Gloria.
Butterfield 8, 1960. The title refers to a phone number of a prostitute played by Elizabeth Taylor named, wait for it, Gloria Wandress. Adding two letters forming a name was an old-school way the telephone company assigned numbers customers were more apt to remember. Lawrence Harvey played the husband of a wealthy woman named Weston Liggett. He was an attorney but went to work for the wife's family business. He isn't happy and feels underappreciated as a husband and lover, so he goes looking for a sexual adventure and finds it. Gloria falls in love, and hence the Hobson's choice of walking away from a life of comfort with a divorce or dumping Gloria. It's reported Liz didn't like the role but was under contract and completed the film, winning Best Actress Oscar. Lawrence Harvey, the man, led a complicated personal life you can read about. Question: what if a man answered at Butterfield 8? Would it be a more interesting movie? More tension? Would it have been possible to make such a movie in 1960? Think about it. I say yes, yes, yes. Tennessee Williams had homosexuality woven into his Broadway plays and film adaptations. I'd simply have a male voice answer, and we'd only see the male prostitute in shadow or dim light, much like Sebastian, who we only see from the back within Suddenly Last Summer. If you did a remake of this movie with my rewrite today, the audience wouldn't bat an eye. Times have changed. Breakfast at Tiffany's, 1961. Audrey Hepburn plays Holly Golightly. Audrey is a young woman and earns her living as an escort to business executives on expense accounts and receives gifts including $50 tips. Holly is looking for a husband, and her opinion, these clients are ripe for the picking. We don't want to believe the beautiful, innocent, and damaged Holly is a prostitute, but Truman Capote's book is not so subtle. In a 1968 interview, Capote was quoted, "Holly might take her escort home for the night if she felt like it."
"Doesn't it get lonely down there in your little room? Or maybe I could bring you some friends. I've got some terrific friends."
"No, thank you."
"Well, men have paid $200 for me, and here you are turning down a freebie. You could get a perfectly good dishwasher for that." "What are you doing with my keys?"
"Give me your hand."
"I knew it."
"Don't be afraid. I'm going to sit you down on the bed. There's someone on the roof.
Clute, 1971, starring Jane Fonda as Bree Daniels, who is a talented, struggling actress who makes her living as a prostitute with a pimp aptly played by Roy Scheider. Look for an outstanding performance from Donald Sutherland as Clute, a stone-faced, square Midwestern detective who plays wonderfully opposite Bree's neuroses. Fonda won the Oscar for Best Actress.
"As long as you live in this house, you live by the rules of this house. Do you understand? Do you understand?"
"Yes, Papa. I can't live here by your rules. And I can't. It's time I went. Alone. My place. My money. My rules."
"Oh, alone in mugger's paradise. Well, that's great. Now we can worry about you day and night."
"I can't stay here and be myself."
Looking for Mr. Goodbar, 1977. Diane Keaton teaching deaf children by day and seeking sexual adventure in all the wrong places at night. What's the point, Jonathan? I've pointed out the differences within the television and movie versions of life in the big city for single women. It's not lost upon me that the movie versions all involved women trading sex and affection for money and gifts. Yeah, it's short-sighted for Hollywood, but even back to the tough, sexy women of the noir films of decades earlier, women still beguiled the men with their femininity. Yet, it was television which brought us The Mary Tyler Moore Show in 1977, Wonder Woman, The Bionic Woman, The Big Valley, Murphy Brown, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman, Grey's Anatomy, Bones, The Walking Dead, Xena the Warrior Princess, and more. Because of television, the trials and tribulations of independent women is fully being explored, which is long overdue. We started a dialogue which I contend began with that girl. Back to Danny and Marlo Thomas. Danny founded the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital in 1955, which focuses on pediatric cancers. I read The research performed at St. Jude's increased the survival rate from 20% to 80%. The story behind Danny's desire to begin St. Jude's is interesting, and you should read about it. Hint: when it hurts to be charitable, it's the most precious time, because good fortune may prevail upon you because of your kindness. It happened to me. Try it. We lost Danny in 1991 at 79. Marlowe continues to shepherd St. Jude's. Marlowe was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2014. She was awarded 4 Emmys, a Grammy, Golden Globe, a Peabody, and was inducted into the Broadcasting and Cable Hall of Fame. Note to Marlowe: my condolences on the loss of your husband. You know your father was a great man, and the world is a better place because of him. In fact, I came across an early 60s newspaper photo of you and Danny standing in front of a new tuberculosis hospital built with charitable funds raised by Danny, just a few blocks from my childhood home up near the mountains north of Los Angeles. On behalf of women and men, thank you for being that girl. Until I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint, and class is dismissed.
And while today one would never refer to a young woman in her 20s as a girl, let's not overlook what Marlowe Thomas represented. After all, empowered women empower women. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. There you'll find everything from drama to romance, something for every reader, including Latchkey Girl, recently published by Modern Literature Magazine. That's jonathanfarini.com, Farini with 2 R's, 1 N. Or drop an email to razorsinkpodcast@gmail.com.